Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Guys in the Cheap Seats podcast with Charles Campisi, where I interview sport business professionals and get insight into their careers and experiences. Today's guest is Jessica Rio, and note that this interview was recorded at the end of February. Took me a little time to get to the editing. Classes this semester took a little bit of a toll, but Jessica is the Executive Senior Associate Athletic Director, Senior Women's Administrator at Temple University, and she gives us some great information. In her current role, she is key in the overall operations of the Temple Athletic Department with a focus on student athlete services, compliance, special projects, and strategic planning. In addition to her work with the Owls, Jessica has worked at Clemson University, the University of Miami, the University of Central Florida, and Florida International University. She earned her bachelor's degree from Florida State University and master's degree from the University of Central Florida. And as you'll find out during this episode, she applied to get into the PhD program at Florida State, and we are happy to let you know that she was accepted and began her classes about 5 weeks ago. Now, on to our interview with Jessica.
All right. So, Jessica, thanks for coming on the podcast. Happy to have you. How is everything in Philly?
It's a little cold. Yeah, I shouldn't complain. Today is a very nice day. It's like in the 50s right now, so I shouldn't complain because we were with 8 inches of snow on Thursday. So a week ago today, it was snowing like crazy.
Yeah, it's been pretty similar here in Cleveland, so I can't, say, oh man, the great weather here. But yeah, today and yesterday have been nice. I appreciate the high 40s and the 50s now, as every February, right? We live up north, yes. And we're surprised that winter exists, but that's the way it goes.
Exactly.
So, exactly. We were talking about your dog before we got on here. You got the vet and all that type of stuff going on. How are you managing then? Are you on campus? Are you off campus? Are you on campus and off campus? You know, what does your day-to-day look like now?
So right now, actually, the city of Philadelphia still doesn't want anybody to come into work. So we are basically at home. And I've been with my dog for 11 months now, me and her, quality time together. So, but I've started to go in 2 days a week. And so trying to get her adjusted to a new schedule, but I go in for all of our contests, since our student athletes are back and our coaches are back. So I'm in twice a week. And then anytime we have athletic events, I'm trying to go in and get on campus.
Okay. Now, so as a senior associate athletic director, SWA, what do your responsibilities entail?
Right now, I started out as one thing, but then I became the COVID person on our campus or for our athletics department. So really for the last 11 months, I've literally been the contact for COVID on in the athletics department. So honestly, it's been COVID protocols, COVID processes, vaccinations, testing, working with campus with that. And then I oversee sports medicine and strength and conditioning and our mental health. It's called TU Well, our mental health area. And then I oversee women's basketball and women's volleyball, and I oversee all of our sports supervisors. So my job is to kind of make sure that we are all on the same page and kind of giving out the same messaging to all of our coaches.
Now, with you having those COVID responsibilities, what are some of the messaging that's going out in regards to that? And how is maybe the fall different than the winter sports, different than the spring sports, or what? How is the university maintaining consistency? What does that look like?
I mean, we are consistently inconsistent, right? I mean, that's what we have figured out is that every time we think that we have some consistency going, something else changes, then, you know, we've got to change. So we, the things that, you know, we try and communicate as much as possible with our student athletes. We try and communicate as much as possible with our coaches. We tried to avoid in the fall, we tried to avoid having our student athletes kind of agree to anything COVID related because we felt like it was changing so much. But we decided this semester, we implemented a COVID acknowledgement form where they had to acknowledge that they understood that it was a pandemic and that they had to actually act a little bit differently than they would as normal college student athletes. And we've actually had a lot of success. I mean, we've had a lot of our student athletes, you know, they have contracted COVID, but it's been asymptomatic cases and, you know, they've gotten through that. A lot of our teams have been able to compete fairly regularly with minimal interruption to their seasons. So, and now a lot of our sports or our spring sports are starting. And so they've actually, you know, we've been starting on time and really I'm keeping my fingers crossed that we're not going to have to keep moving schedules around.
Yeah, that's always the key is to try to keep those schedules in place. I know there's a, you know, I essentially view it through the lens of, oh, I wanted to watch that game and now it's not happening. So we know what your current role is. Why don't you take us through your progress, right? You moved from, you know, starting in communications to moving into compliance, then student services, now, you know, responsible for a variety of different departments and roles. Take us through your path to your current role.
Okay. So I started out as an intern or student worker at Florida State University in the sports information office at the time. So it was, that was kind of how it was categorized as sports information. It's kind of morphed into communication now, but so I started out as a sports information student worker and worked at Florida State for my entire 4 years of college. And when I graduated, I was given the opportunity to work as an intern at the Atlantic Coast Conference office. And I worked there, it was a year-long internship. It was fantastic. It was in the communications office with them, or media relations, as they termed it at the time. So I worked with them for a year. Through that internship, I wound up interviewing and getting a job at Clemson University as an assistant sports information director. And I worked in sports information for about 2.5 years, and I realized that it probably wasn't the thing that I wanted to do permanently. And so I had an opportunity to work with someone from the Atlantic Coast Conference who had gone to the University of Miami as the head of the athletics compliance office. And she asked me if I would be willing to come and work at the University of Miami. And so I took that job and I wound up actually outlasting her. I stayed there for about 7 years, I think. You know, just really learned about athletics compliance and was an assistant director. And then I got a phone call from a mutual friend or an acquaintance of mine who said they had just taken a job at the University of Central Florida and they were looking for a director of compliance and wanted to know if I knew anybody. And I was like, well, what if I said I was interested in that? And the person said, I thought you would never leave the University of Miami because I actually loved the University of Miami. And so, but I said, yeah, I would, you know, I would consider it. I looked at UCF. I thought it looked like a fantastic place to be. And so I took that job and I wound up staying at UCF for about 12 and a half years. And in my work at UCF, when I got the job, or as I was interviewing for the job, I said to the athletics director that I really was interested in kind of moving up and becoming an administrator and wanted to kind of move into that role. So I kind of had that plan heading into that that university. And so I got the job as a director of compliance, and about, I think it was like a year and a half later, the athletics director got a job at Southern Methodist University. So we had an opportunity for a new athletics director to come in. And the senior woman administrator at the time had actually gotten ill. And so she was not around. So I wound up absorbing a lot of her duties during that time. And when she decided, or actually she passed away. And so, but I think before that she had decided that she wasn't coming back. And so the previous athletics director, the one that I was hired under, actually promoted me immediately to take over her roles. But the new athletics director came in and I wasn't sure what was going to happen. So I stayed, you know, he came in and talked to me, and I wound up working with him and kind of taking on a lot more responsibility. And that's where I really got into student services. I oversaw sports medicine eventually there, and strength and conditioning, multiple sports, times. And so, you know, really learned a lot at the University of Central Florida. And then, you know, one of the things that you learn is that, you know, you have to be adaptable. And I was adaptable through another athletics director after that. And then we had, there was another athletics director that came in, and we just had different ideas about things. And so I made a decision that I needed to kind of, you know, do something else. And so one of the people that I had worked with at the University of Miami was the athletics director at Florida International University. And he offered me a position as their senior associate AD for compliance and special projects, because he knew that I wanted to do other things. And so when I got there, I took that job. And when I got there, I took over their student service area in addition to compliance, and was there for 4 years. And then the opportunity came up at Temple. And so I've been at Temple for about a year and a half. 6 months after I took this job, the athletics director decided that Boston College was calling his name. So I'm going through another athletics director transition, and we are working now with an interim athletics director, and we'll hopefully have an athletics director at some point here soon, a full-time AD. So yeah, it's been a very interesting progression through my profession.
Now, what is that like, that adjustment where, you know, you're in a role and, you know, for the majority of those roles that you've been in, when the athletics director has changed, you've been in a very senior role in that athletics department, when now you have a new person that you're reporting to, and how long does that kind of just adjustment to a new style or methodology take to kind of get the hang of?
It's interesting. I mean, it really depends on the athletics director. And, you know, what I realized is that I just want to do my job, right? And I want to do my job to the best of my ability. And so every day that I would go in through these transitions, it was just be who you are and do your job. And if the person likes you or doesn't like you or respects what you're doing or doesn't respect it, like, you're going to know. You're going to figure it out, and you're going to figure it out pretty quickly. And so I've been fortunate that the people that I have worked with every time have had a lot of very similar values. I think there's a lot of good people in this business, people who want to do the best for the student athletes and want to do the best for the coaches and the staff that they're working with every day. And my goal has always been to work with people like that, people who, you know, want to see the student athlete succeed off the court as well as on the court, that want to prepare them for the day after they leave college. And so I've always tried to work with people like that. And if, even if their methods are different than mine, I have no problem adapting to that as long as I think that the end goal is the same. And that's to make sure that the kids are taken care of and, you know, that again, that you're kind of taking care of your staff and helping them grow and move up or move on as the case may be, depending on what they want.
Okay. How has the evolution of kind of that student athlete welfare piece, you know, kind of evolved since you've been in intercollegiate athletics? Because, I mean, I remember, you know, when we were both at the U at the same time for a period, that it was essentially, you know, academic services and athletic training, and that was kind of it.
Sure.
You know, so what is that, you know, since that's been a part of your career, what does that look like in that growth, and what is one of the reasons that you wanted to get involved in that piece of the industry as well?
I think I've always brought, so I think I would say, well, there's a couple of things. So the NCAA mandated that you have a CHAMPS life skills program in your athletics department. It's actually a mandate. And what happened with that is that a lot of institutions just folded that into their academic departments. And so that kind of started the evolution of the programming. However, the deeper that people got into it, they realized that it's its own job. And so you couldn't really just put it right on top of, you know, being an academic advisor, because it was just very intricate. There was a lot that went on with it. And I think for me personally, and why I got involved, is that what I realized is that I think I'm a little different than a lot of people that have gotten into intercollegiate athletics, in that I was not a student athlete. We all played, you know, soccer and different things when we were kids, but in terms of being an athlete, like, that was never my primary focus. My focus was always relational and relationships that I established with coaches, with student athletes. And so the more I got involved in the relationships, the more you want to see those people succeed, right? And that you work towards saying, okay, when you leave here, like, what are you going to do? Because they have an athletic trainer to figure out, you know, their medical needs, and they have an academic person to push them on the academic front, and they have a coach that is going to push them on the athletics front. And I was the one person, I feel like, or one of the few people that would ask them, well, how are you doing? What's going on with you? What do you want to do when you get done? Like, I have an English degree. And if you had asked me what I was going to do with that English degree when I graduated from college, I would have told you I have no idea. And so I think a lot of our student athletes have that same thing. Like, they may get a degree in interdisciplinary studies or liberal studies, and they don't know what that means. And nobody's really asking them about that for the day that they graduate. What are they going to do? Are they prepared? Have they thought about it? Because they're so consumed with their sport from the time that they step on campus until the time that they leave, that there's very little room for anything else. And so I believe that that department became very, very important, and currently is very important to their growth and development and their awareness of what happens the day after I leave my campus and that security that I've built for 4 or 5 years. So that became very important to me. And we changed the narrative a lot at UCF to not if I graduate, but when I graduate. So when I graduate, what am I going to do? And we had answers for them. Our goal was to give them 3 options aside from being a professional athlete. So they had 3 options. One was a professional career where they were going to go into, they had a career choice that they wanted to, the, you know, they wanted to be an accountant. They wanted to be a, you know, something along those lines. And then the second was, I just need a job, right? So it may not be a career, but at least you have a job when you walk out the door. And the third was advanced education. So are you going to apply for a master's degree or a doctoral degree? How are we going to get you through the system? So you had 3 choices when you were leaving, and you didn't get out of there, in my mind, without making one of those choices. And so that I've tried to carry with me. We were implementing all of that at FIU, and I think it's still in the process of being implemented after I left. And it's something that I'd like to bring here to Temple.
Is there one element of that, or one program, or one, you know, because I know sometimes there's hey, athlete seminars, or is there one piece of that that you've worked on and developed that you're really proud of?
I really enjoyed, and I think we really did a lot with the Knights Without Borders program at UCF. And it's something that, again, it took a lot of time to develop, and I'd really like to do it here. They have a different version of it here, but the Knights Without Borders program was the brainchild of our athletic director, who was Todd Stansberry at the time. And he had done it at Oregon State and brought it with him. And it was fascinating. We took 15 student athletes, between 12 and 15 student athletes, and about 10 staff members, between a sports medicine person, a videographer, chaperones, and whatnot. And we went to another country and utilized sport to really encourage social change and a different way of looking at things. And so we went to a socioeconomically challenged area and did work in that community. And so because of that, it really kind of changed my perspective. It changed the perspective of student athletes. There was on our first trip, no, our may have been our first trip. I can't remember. It was either on our first trip or our second trip. I think it was on our first trip, but one of our student athletes, while I was there, we were staying in a facility that was on the top, basically the top of a mountain, that was a self-sustaining place where they grew their own food. They collected rainwater for their showers. They, you know, everything, they solar energy for heating and cooling. But I remember sitting there, and we were getting the internet, and I got an email message from Dr. Lapchick, who's at the University of Central Florida, in the DeVos Sport Management Program. And he was asking for a student who would be good to nominate for a program that was taking place in Greece called Olympism for Humanity. And I was reading the description and thought, oh my God, there's a student athlete here that would be perfect for this. And so I sent it to her immediately, and I told her I wanted her to apply for it. She wound up getting selected and spent the summer in Greece, and it changed the trajectory of her life. I mean, literally changed everything that she was doing. And it's things like that that you can never put a price tag on. You can't, you know, it doesn't happen all the time, but when it does, it's fantastic. And you think to yourself, oh, as a professional in this business, I got to take a little bit of part in that. And I think those are the types of things that happened more than not on those trips, where we changed the kids' lives. And it was just, those are things that I'd like to bring forward everywhere I go.
No, that's great. And I think, yeah, anytime you can get students or student athletes, you know, out of their comfort zones to different countries, doing different projects, then the impact is pretty substantial on all involved. So we'll take a little bit of a detour, but still on those same things. What's your best skill or attribute? What's the thing that makes Jessica successful?
I don't really know. You'd probably have to ask other people. I mean, I think that it's my relationships that I've built with people. I work very hard at those relationships and maintaining them. I think that's important. I think it's important to help people find their way. So I think, you know, relationships is probably my strength.
Is there specific things that you do, I'm going to interrupt here, to maintain those relationships? You know, I know people are, oh, well, you just, you know, you got to keep, but are there things where you're like, oh, I got to make sure I do this, right? I have to make sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I spend time, you know, networking, if you want to call it that, but I make sure that I carve out time throughout a month to reach out to somebody who I haven't spoken to in, you know, a couple months, or I shoot them an email on through LinkedIn, or I'll text somebody when it's their birthday and I haven't talked to them in a while. I mean, I try and cultivate relationships because I think that they're so important in this business. And you never know with people as to where you're going to need somebody, right, to help you. But a lot of it comes down to I genuinely like interacting with people. I think you have to go into it with that too. You genuinely have to want to know about, you know, a student athlete or an assistant coach or a, you know, those are that, because people can see through it. And so I think that's what has made me enjoy this job is the relationships that I've made with people. And so I try to work at making sure that people know that I remember them and I want to talk to them and I want to see them successful. And so if I see something that honors or celebrates somebody that I know, I try and reach out to say, hey, congratulations, or, you know, I'm very proud of you for doing that, especially with former student athletes. I try and do that a lot because I think that they've contributed so much to the program. But aside from that, they're good people. We work with a lot of good people. We work with a lot of people who have overcome different things to get where they are, and they don't have positive reinforcement in their lives. And so we're the ones that provide that to them. And so I think it's important to establish and keep relationships with people that you enjoy in this business, because it's just so hard.
I'm going to ask a question that, you know, as I'm looking at, you know, the resume, and I'm thinking about everything here, you know, a lot of the stops that you've made, which is, I think, a little bit rare for having been in major Division I intercollegiate athletics, is most of your stops are in major metropolitan areas. But you were in Clemson for a period of time. Do you think there's a difference for student athletes that are on what would be more of that, you know, college, true college campus environment, like a Clemson, versus student athletes that are, you know, in Philly or Miami during their college years?
There probably is, but I feel like college kids figure it out no matter where they are, where to go and who to see. But the biggest difference, especially just even for me with Clemson, I was 23 years old in Clemson, South Carolina, and I was from the Northeast. Like, to say shock is a little bit of an understatement. That being said, you know, I loved it, but it was very, very different. And I think it's actually what made me think, I think I'd rather be in a city. I like the culture diversity. Like, I enjoy that. It's very important to me. I like diversity in my workspace. I like diversity in my community. I like diversity. I'd like to be able to get in a car and, you know, drive to, or get on a train, as the case may be,
yeah,
here, but, you know, and drive to different places and see different things. And, you know, as much as I loved Clemson, you know, trying to get anywhere from Clemson, it was a 2-hour drive to get to Atlanta, to get to Charlotte, to get to, you know, so for me, I enjoy the city life, but I think student athletes are different in the sense that they have a community the moment that they step on a campus. So it's very different than a regular student stepping onto campus, in my opinion. But I think they can thrive in either environment. I think it's just different. They have to figure it out no matter where they are.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Hopefully that answers that question.
Yeah, something I'm looking at, like, you know, a lot of the West Coast schools are big cities, but, you know, a lot of the, you know, East Coast and Midwest schools are, you know, it's the city is the town, you know, the campus. And
right.
So it's just a different feel from that standpoint. So I was just interested to see how you interpreted that. Now, we'll take a little bit of break. We're at about the halfway point. I typically take a break here at about the halfway point and ask you some random questions.
Okay.
So you've been in Philly for a while, but you were in Miami for an extended period of time between your time in with the U and then your time at FIU. So I'm going to ask you for a Miami option and then for a Philly option. And I know you've only been in Philly for about 18 months. And probably the majority of those have been COVID-ish. So this one, that one might be tougher. If we're going to lunch, where are we going to lunch and what are we going to get?
Well, let's see. In Miami?
It will go Miami and then Temple. You could throw in Orlando too if you want to throw in, you know, some UCF stuff there too.
Okay, let's see. So in Miami, we're probably going to go. So unbeknownst to a lot of people, I'm a big follower of Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives.
Okay. All right. All right.
So in Miami, I would try and find something that was Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. And so there was a place there called, I'm trying to think of the name of it, that I used to love. Oh my gosh.
To pull up my Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives.
I know. Here. It was called like the, hold on. I've seen, I can tell you exactly. Hold on. Scully's Tavern. It would either be Scully's Tavern or Latin House because they were so good. So good.
Okay. All right.
So that's there. Here it's, you know, all about the cheesesteak. So I've found everybody has a different opinion about a cheesesteak. So we'd have to go to Gino's. That would probably be the first stop, but we'd have to have, you know, multiple cheesesteak stops. That's just how it is.
Okay.
And then Orlando, my favorite all-time place is it's called Jimmy Hula's and it's like my favorite place. I get so upset that I'm still here and I don't have access to Jimmy Hula's. It's very disappointing.
What's it's the order at Jimmy Hula's?
Fish taco. Oh, it's usually a burger and they just have so much good stuff. Oh, I can't even now. I'm like, it's making me upset thinking about it. I get a bowl. I do their Baja bowl. I've done their tropical salad bowl. I've done burgers there. It doesn't even matter because every single thing was good. Now right. I'm depressed.
Next time I'm down there, I don't think I've ever been to Jimmy Hula's, so I'm gonna.
Oh, it's great! It's so good. If I'm gonna quit college athletics, I should open a Jimmy Hula's.
I don't know. You're not supposed to eat your own supply, right?
I know, right?
Ugh. So fair enough. I'll give you that. I'll give you that. Now this one, let's do summertime. So athletic season is over, right? While there's still work to be done in the office, you generally have your weekends. On Saturdays or Sundays, what are you doing? What can we find you doing?
Finding my way to the beach. That's it. I'm a beach girl. I would sit on the beach, walk on the beach. If I can be on the beach anytime on the beach, that's where I want to be.
Yeah. Fair enough. Is there a beach beverage of choice?
No. You're sitting out there. It's too hot to be drinking too much.
Well, hey, you throw some Arnold Palmer's on there, right? It doesn't have to be anything.
Well, that's true.
Crazy.
Yes. Okay. Then anything. I'd go with an Arnold Palmer.
All right. That tends to be my beach beverage of choice. So I'm good with that. All right. You don't have to name three if you don't want to, but what are three pet peeves that you have? They could either be job related. They could just be, you know, hey, this is something personal. That's just a pet peeve of mine. What do you have?
So one pet peeve is when people reach out to me that want to be in this business and that will, you know, got my business card or called me or emailed me and want to tell me that they want to be in the business. And then they don't follow up with me. You know, they tell me they want to talk to me or we do talk and then I never hear from them again. I think that's a huge pet peeve of mine. Cause I'm like, my thought process is I've taken the time out to speak with you. And especially if you say you're going to follow up and then I never hear from you. So that's one. And another one is when I have to follow up with you to get information that I've asked for, because I feel like in this business, again, life, you know, things are coming at me 1,000 times a day, you know, at 1,000 miles an hour. And so for me to have to follow up, I feel like you should be responsible enough that when I ask for something, I should be able to rely on you to get the information back that I've asked for. So that's pet peeve number two. And then a personal pet peeve of mine is that my dog sits and stares at me. She wants something to eat. And I cannot stand it. She drives me insane, but that's okay because she's a dog.
Yeah. Gotten a lot of that over the last 11 months, I'm sure.
Yes. She just sits and stares. That's all she does. She won't do anything else. She just sits and stares. And I'm like, stop staring at me.
Yeah. We had, when we had a big dog for a while and he passed away a couple years ago, but, we used to have a recliner, a leather recliner, and that was his chair. Right. Even though it wasn't, it was his chair. And so if you were sitting in it, he would literally sit right in front of you and just stare at you until you moved.
Yep. Smart dog. And he got you to do it.
Yeah. He'd be like, man, like, stop. Like, yeah, you just curl up in it. Right. This is my spot, man. So
that's right. Well,
hey. Yeah. They make you do it. They make you do it.
That's right. They claim their space. That's for sure.
They do. So what's a goal that you have for yourself? What's something that if we were talking, you know, end of February 2022 that you want to accomplish? It could be something professional. It could be something personal. What's something that you're working towards?
Well, I actually have applied to get a doctorate. So I'm waiting to see if I'm going to be accepted into school. And so it would probably be at least to start down the path of getting that. I think that would be probably a goal.
Nice. And I'm assuming you're going to be doing that at a temple.
Actually, no.
No. All right. That's why you don't assume, right?
That's right. I actually applied to Florida State's.
Ah, okay. Sport management, or are we doing something else?
No, leadership
and higher ed.
Yeah. Leadership and higher ed. Yep.
Okay. Nice.
So we'll see. That may change because Temple is free, but.
Well, that's why I made the assumption, right?
Yes, but I'm not really sure yet because I wanted to. Temple didn't really have a program that I was like, I thought was, you know, exactly what I was looking for, but I'm still deciding. So.
Okay. All right. I know this is early. This is going to be an early question here, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Do you have any idea what you want your dissertation topic to be?
Oh God, I have no idea. That might be a little bit of a lie. I might think about doing it on work-life balance.
Okay.
And whether that's possible in intercollegiate athletics.
Oh, that'd be a good one.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you'd have plenty of people to choose from as potential subjects. So
exactly. I think you'd be okay. And the difference between male coaches and women, female coaches in that Ooh. Same. Yeah.
That would be good. That would be good. I like that.
Don't All give right. it away, buddy.
Well, sorry, go ahead.
I said, don't give that away to anybody. Don't let anybody take my topic.
Yeah. I'm contacting my IRB right now to see if I can.
I know, right?
No, but that's a good one. I like that one. I like that one. That's I haven't seen much on that, so I think that would be a solid topic. All right, next question. What is something that's on your bucket list? What is something that you want to do? Whether it's travel, whether it's, you know, attend an event, what's something that's on Jessica's bucket list?
Well, everything's changed because of COVID. So probably, I'd actually like to learn how to horseback ride. It's been a long time since I've done that. And so like a really long time. So I'd like to learn that. I don't know. That's very random, but.
That's got to be back from Tallahassee days. I'm sure you went horseback riding in Tallahassee.
Oh my gosh, it's before even that. It was when I was in high school.
Okay.
It's been a really long time. And so there's a lot of horses around here, and there's I have like two friends that have daughters now that are doing equestrian stuff, and so we've just all been talking about it a lot. And I'm like, I'd really like to, you know, see if I can horseback ride or, you know, just take some lessons and be able to go out on occasion and be comfortable on a horse. Cause I think it would be neat, but.
Okay. So we're just talking like regular riding. We're not talking, hey, I want to learn maybe how to do some jumping or play some polo or something.
None of that.
I'm just making sure. Just making sure.
Can't really see myself playing polo, but.
Hey, you never know.
It's not really the crowd I run in.
A lot of money in that Philly corridor right up there.
I guess
so. You never know.
Yeah.
You're not too far from the Hamptons. So talk us through, what are some of your habits to make sure that you're doing everything that you need to do? You know, it could be daily habits. It could be weekly habits. It could, you know, you mentioned earlier, hey, I make time to connect with people that I haven't connected with before. But what are things that you do that keep you on track? Like, hey, every Monday I do this, or every Wednesday I do this, or every day at 3 o'clock I'm making sure I'm doing X, Y, and Z. What are some of those that you have?
Well, I think keeping a routine, a very specific routine, especially through COVID, has been important. And so, you know, for me, it's, you know, it's getting up at the same time every day and kind of getting into that routine of making sure that, you know, I'm at the office or my computer's on or my phone is on, you know, all the time, basically. I try and shut down from that perspective around 10 at night, but a lot of times coaches and you know, coaches and staff are texting me after that. The biggest thing is, I think, you know, being available to people. I try and make sure that I'm available. But in terms of things that I do, I don't know. I check in every time I end a meeting. I do this. I've started to do this, and I think it's been very helpful. Every time, just before I end a meeting or before a meeting is going to end, I ask whomever it is there anything else that I can do for you or that you need from me? And it just opens up conversation, you know, additional conversation. And so it's actually turned out to be effective because you learn things when people are relaxed, they will, you know, they'll share stuff. And so, you know, I usually start out meetings with, you know, how are you doing individually? Like, not the team, not the, you know, not work. Like, tell me, how are you doing? How's your family? So I try and start out and end with things that are not related to the task at hand, so to speak, so that people can feel like if there's things that they need from me, they have the opening and they have the opportunity to ask for those things.
Oh, that's good. I like that. That's a nice little thing. I think that's a good way to end a meeting, I think, as well.
Yeah.
I like that. So I'm going to circle back real quick to the PhD. What's your inspiration for, hey, you know what? You're already a senior associate AD. You have the master's degree. What's the impetus for the PhD?
It's, you know, it's twofold and, you know, it's part of it. You know, the first part is personal, just a personal accomplishment. I'd like to do it. Second is that I went through a large part of my career without a master's degree. Got a master's degree very late, actually graduated with a master's in 2010. So I waited a long time after graduating from college to get my master's. And I felt like I wasn't getting the opportunity to advance in my job because I didn't have a master's degree. But I graduated at a time where a master's degree wasn't necessarily, you know, expected. Now it's expected. And so it's becoming a given now that everybody has a master's degree. So now I kind of think if I want to move up again, that having a doctoral degree or at least courses in it or starting it would be beneficial to me from that perspective. So it's twofold, again, a personal accomplishment. And then from a work perspective, I think it would help me.
Okay. Now, do you mind if I start the Jessica Rio for Brown Athletic Director campaign? Am I allowed to do that?
I'm not moving anywhere further north than where I am right now.
All right. So,
trust me, I've actually had a couple of people that have asked me about different jobs, and I've said that exact thing to them. I'm like, you don't understand. Like, it took a lot for me to come here and be in Florida for 25 years. That's a long time.
It is. Yeah, it's tough. And I go back regularly because my mom lives down there and my mother-in-law lives down there. And every time I go back, I'm like, especially if we go back during like winter break or something like that, I'm just like, why am I dealing with snow?
Exactly.
When I could be, you know, hanging out here. But as I said, it's part of the deal. So talk us through, and since I know I've had you talk to some of classes before, I know a little bit of the backstory that got you to Florida State. Tell folks who may be listening, like, you know, how you got to Florida State, and then what are some of the things that you did in college to help prepare you for a career in this industry?
Sure. It was really a pure chance, I think, sometimes. So I was in the marching band when I was in high school. And I was very opinionated, and I shared my opinion with the band director at the time in front of a large group of people. And so I was not really welcome back into the band anymore.
Which is fantastic.
Yes. So it wasn't really my mother, and my mom worked in the main office of the high school. And my mom said to me, you're not going to do nothing. Like, you have to do something. So right then my high school football coach walked into the office, and he said that he was looking for a stat keeper. So my mom was like, well, right here, we've got somebody for you right here. So I wound up keeping stats for our football team for the next 3 years. And when I was graduating, I was trying to decide on a school in Florida because my parents told me that they wanted to move to Florida. So I was looking at all the different schools and didn't know anything at all about Florida State, except that it was a big school in the state. It was a state school. And they had, you know, an athletic program. And so back then, recruiting was very different. And the relationships, not that they aren't now, but the relationship with the high school coach and a football coach was really, really important. And so unbeknownst to me, one of my high school football coaches wrote a letter to Bobby Bowden, and Bobby Bowden took that letter and said, you know, this is Jessica Rio. She's going to be coming to your school. She has worked with us for 3 years. We think she would be great working in the, you know, for the football program. And Bobby Bowden took that letter and he forwarded it to the athletics director. And the athletics director then forwarded that letter to the head of sports information. And the head of sports information actually wrote me a letter, which I still have to this day, actually typed me a letter and said, if you want to come and work in the athletics department, when you come to orientation, I want you to, you know, look me up and come and meet with me in my office. And so I did. And I, you know, he offered me a job on the spot. Basically, I had no idea what Florida State sports was. I had no idea of the impact that it would have on the next 4 years or the next 30 years of my life. But I really credit that time to making me who I am. Between that and the Atlantic Conference internship, the support that I received, I still speak to my boss from Florida State to this day. We still communicate on a regular basis. I help him out. When I was living in Miami, I was helping out with different things. He was working for the Florida Sports Hall of Fame, so I was helping with events with that. I mean, so that kind of set the tone, and I wound up working there, like I said, for all 4 years of college. And it was funny because in that first or second semester, my boss brought all of the student interns in and said, you know, if you don't want to do this job, I've got about 25 people that'll be lined up to take it from you in about 30 seconds. So, you know, all of us are replaceable. Just understand that. So if you don't want to work hard, and if you just want to come in and go to an athletic event, this is not the job for you. And so I took that as a challenge, and it kind of set the tone for how I was, you know, moving forward. And we all have our ups and downs, and it was very difficult, honestly, for a female in that business, in this business back then. And so he was one of those people that, you know, really looked out for me and told me I could do whatever I wanted to do in this business. And so I remain very close to him. I've had a lot of male champions in this business that, have been, integral to my success. And so that laid the foundation. My time at Florida State, my time as high school stat keeper, those types of things, that laid the foundation for my career.
Okay. Now, how important is what you just mentioned, whether it's, you know, male, female, whatever, anybody, how important is it to have somebody that is a champion for you in an organization? And how would somebody go about, you know, not necessarily trying to find someone, but at least, you know, trying to navigate that path to building that relationship to make sure that they had those people?
I think everybody needs that. I don't think you move up without it, quite frankly. I think that you have to work at that. And it comes back to the relationships that you create with people and how you utilize those relationships. Because you have to be vulnerable with people. You have to be truthful with people. You have to work hard every day. And so, you know, when somebody says to you, well, what do you want to do? You have to be prepared and have an answer. How do you want to move forward? What do you want to do? Because that means that when they're in those bigger meetings or when they're in those meetings with the athletics director and the athletics director says, I need A, B, or C done, they can say, oh, hey, Jessica's available to do this project. I think she would be great at it. So it puts you in a position when you have a champion in the room to get an opportunity that somebody else might not have. But you have to make an effort. The effort comes from both sides. So I think, again, being truthful, being vulnerable with people, being honest with people, and finding out who will support you, who will be your champion, because that will help you move forward in your career. And so I think those champions are very, very important.
All right. So we're approaching the hour mark here. So I got a couple more questions for you. First one, we'll go, if you could interview anyone living or dead, who would it be and why?
Let's see. I don't know. That's a good question. I'd probably just like to sit and talk to I don't know. Let's come back to that question.
All right. Fair enough. Hey, we'll just say there's too many to choose, right? That's right.
There are too many to choose.
So do you have any favorite stories from your work life? So if you're sitting around with a bunch of collegiate athletics administrators and, you know, you're at your, you know, NCAA down in Orlando, next time that you're able to do that, right? And everybody's having a post-conference get together. What's a story that you're going to share? Can you top this story, or, oh, you won't believe that this happened story?
Oh, are you kidding me? It's got to be our days at the University of Miami. I mean, we were both there at a time where, I mean, the stuff that went on there is unbelievable in terms of just the student athletes and the things that they did and all the time, especially in compliance, right? I mean, I always had stories for when you're in compliance. And, you know, I guess favorite stories are ones where, you know, the student athlete is the champion in the story, or comes out like with a waiver that we got approved. And so I've had a couple of those in the last few years. But the funny stories are the stories of, like, can you believe this? They all originated at the University of Miami. Every single one of them.
Yeah, I that fax machine story is still one of my favorite stories I believe all time. I remember you, like, I think you, like, just, I was, and you're like, you have to come in here, I have to tell someone this. And I was like, what's going on? I'm like, she's like, no, you will not believe what just happened to me. And I was like, no, you're right, I do not believe that. I believe it, but I can't believe it. Right.
So, yes.
So, all right.
But I mean, when you have you watched the Rock, the show that he's doing now?
I haven't seen it yet. I've DVR'd it, but I haven't watched it.
Well, it's funny because when I got to the University of Miami and I walked into the strength and conditioning area, I thought to myself, there's no way that, like, there were four national championship football teams that came out of this strength and conditioning area. And what's funny is that in the show, they flash back to him walking into the strength and conditioning area for the first time. And it looks like what I remember to an extent, which is like, I kind of threw me off because I was like, oh my God, I can't believe that people, but that was just the place that things just occurred that you were just like, how is this happening? How is this possible that this is happening here?
Yeah. Yeah. Some of those facilities were interesting. They were interesting.
Oh my God. They were awful. And again, you know, I went to I had been at Clemson. Right. And so I'm at Clemson University where everything is like larger than life and, you know, all this stuff. And I walk in and I'm like, all right, I'm going to the University of Miami. They've won four national championships in football. They've got all this money. They've got all these, you know, amenities. It's in like the most beautiful city in the world. And I went to the window and it's like, it's one of those where they have the ceiling tiles. They have the ceiling tiles out because when the guys are standing on the treadmills, their heads are inside, they're touching the ceiling tiles. So they had to remove the ceiling tiles so that they could actually work out on a treadmill. That's how low the ceiling is. Ugh.
Yeah. Well, I mean, remember, I used to have to leave our area to walk into the athletic department building, right? Because we were that like side attachment in sports yes. information to the, they're like, oh, you guys can go in like the old storage room.
Right.
And that'll be your offices. So yeah, the Hecht has, we visited it when we were down in Miami, for the Super Bowl. It's much better now. It's much better.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, all right. Is there anything I should have asked you that I didn't? And I do have one more question, but I'll start with this one.
No, I don't think so. I think you hit on all the highlights.
All right. So I have then one or two other. Well, we'll just go with one. If you were talking to a group of, you know, you mentioned it earlier, hey, you talk to those sport management professionals or young people that reach out to you and say, hey, I want to get into this industry. What is your advice for those folks who want to work in sport, whether at whatever level in whatever department? What would be the advice that you give them?
My advice would be that just because it's unpaid doesn't mean it's unworthy of being a good job. And so you have to volunteer. You have to take the time to do that, to figure out if, you know, sometimes to get your foot in the door, really. And then the other thing would be, again, you know, really develop relationships. The people that you see on the way up are those same ones that you see on the way down. So relationship building becomes very important through this career. And people remember when you're not nice or when you don't want to do something or when you won't volunteer to help out. They remember that and they'll go to the people who do.
Okay. All right. Since we know, you're not moving further north for the Brown job. we do know that St. Joe's job is, that's athletics development. But I do know that there's a job at an institution called Baldwin Wallace University. They're hiring an athletic director right now. So if you want to move from the big leagues to D3, we'd be happy to have you. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that. I actually would not mind working in a D3. I think it's actually a great opportunity. However, as I said earlier, my favorite place is the beach. And I don't really think that Baldwin Wallace has a beach anywhere close to it.
Lake Erie has coastline. It's 15 minutes away. And we do have some sand volleyball courts on campus. We can, you know, we can mock up some beach.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to do it.
All right. Fair enough.
However, I appreciate that. I really do.
So, I'm always looking for the best talent. I don't care who it's coming from. Hey, come on, join our team. And, that's what makes it work. So, all right, Jessica. Well, I appreciate you taking the time out of your day to chat with me today and share your story and background and share advice with anybody who's listening. So thanks for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for asking me.
Hey, Cheap Seaters, that concludes this episode of The Guys in the Cheap Seats, where I interview sport business professionals and get insight into their careers and experiences. Thanks to our guest, Jessica Rio, and good luck with that PhD, Jessica. And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review The Guys in the Cheap Seats wherever you find your favorite podcasts. And stay tuned for our upcoming episode where we talk to Sports Digital Vice President of Business Development, Doug Holtzman.